Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Attention, idiots! You are about to listen to the new series of Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with me, Richard Herring. But you don't have to listen to it. This series, you can also watch the video for free. You can watch it on iTunes. Search for Richard Herring Video Leicester Square Theatre Podcast. They had to put the video there to differentiate it from this one. Rehover Leicester, if you want to be pedantic about it. Or it's going to be on YouTube and Vimeo for free. Or you can just listen to it in the usual fashion through your ears for no money as well. This will be the last time we could do this. It's costing us a lot of money. So if you want to help us out, head to gofasterstripe.com/badges and make a one-off or monthly donation. That would really help us. Or just buy one of my DVDs from Go Faster Stripe. Or come and see me on tour. Go to richardherring.com/gigs for the details of where I'm coming on tour. But that's all by the by. You're not going to give any money, are you? Because you're an idiot. So here is this week's Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I'm very excited. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. This is Robot Voice. Please welcome Richard Herring. Thank you very much. Lovely to be here. Welcome to I don't even know what series this is. I should have looked it up. Five? I don't know. Six? We've done loads of them. Of Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre Podcast, or as all the cool kids are calling it, Rehellastapur. Although if you're watching the video version on iTunes, it's called, just to differentiate it, it's called Richard Herring's Video Leicester Square Theatre Podcast, so that is Rehellastapur. Yeah, not sure about that as an idea here. They don't like change here in the Leicester Square Theatre. I am not very well. I've managed to work very hard all year and not get ill. I didn't get ill in Edinburgh, and I didn't get ill on holiday, which usually happens, but I've just got a little bit of a cold or something as we come start doing this. So if I fall asleep or collapse, I didn't really sleep last night. So everything is already feeling a bit trippy to me. I've had quite a few Lem sips. That's... Sometimes I do that when I don't even need to have the Lem sips, but just for the kick, you know. I'm this, You know what I'm talking about. So it might get a bit surreal. I might fall asleep. I was up very early in the morning watching a video on the internet about a conspiracy theory that someone still believes that Paul McCartney is not the real Paul McCartney. People still believe that Paul McCartney died in 1966 and that was replaced by a false Paul McCartney, which, I mean, out of all the conspiracy theories, that would be so difficult to have arranged. It'd be so impressive if they'd done that. That, oh no, Paul McCartney's died in a car accident. Well, quickly, let's hush this up. Make sure no one knows about it. Hide the body. Just throw Paul McCartney's body in a well or something. We'll get a bloke who looks a bit like Paul McCartney to come in. Just hope he can write his songs and sing. We'll do a bit of plastic surgery on him. It'll be fine. See, something they're genuine. It's quite a... I think it probably is a different bloke. How did the bloke who replaced Paul McCartney, it's meant to be like a lookalike, who'd won a lookalike competition, did no one go, what happened to that bloke who what happened to him? He just disappeared, our friend. He looks a bit like Paul McCartney, didn't he? Yeah. Looks a bit like Paul McCartney. I've just been away in Wales at the Larn Festival in Wales over the weekend, which was fun. But weirdly for me, one of the other acts on at the festival, it was a very small town and hardly any other acts. One of the acts was Keith Allen, my nemesis. I was kind of terrified. Everyone was staying in the same tiny little hotel, so I kind of thought, I'm bound to run into him. And he probably won't know who I am. He won't remember me. He kind of sabotaged my show when I was a student and wrecked my life. But I kind of thought, if I see him, I'll ask him to be a guest on this. But I didn't see him. But it would be worth it just to ask him, what would it take for you to suck your own cock? But that would be the only thing that made it worthwhile, which would be a great crossover for you all. But someone who was at the hotel was Kevin Rowland. That's what you have to call him, Kevin Rowland. So that's a joke that only... I'm looking at some young faces. There's some young people here. And they're going, who's Kevin Rowland? That kid there. Look, and why are you saying Rowland in that stupid way? It's too much to explain to you. I have to start right from the beginning and explain who Kevin Rowland is and then why I'm saying Kevin Rowland. it was very interesting. I shared a cab with him and... He was in a band called Dexys Midnight Runners. He's now in a band called Dexys. It's very different stuff. It is actually very different. But I shared a car with him from the station to the hotel. And I was just kind of terrified that I would just start singing a bit of Come On Eileen. Just absent-mindedly, or Gino, or Jockey Wilson Says, as I call it. I just thought, and then I thought, have I done it? Did I just sung him? And when I was a kid, I used to be able to play the bit from Gino on the trumpet. I should have thanked him, but I was too scared to talk to him. And I sat near him at breakfast as well. I should have asked him on this, shouldn't I? No, because you wouldn't have come, because who's Kevin Rowland? When we checked in, I went and said, I'm Richard Haynes, and I got in the game back in. Then she said, and what's your name to Kevin Rowland? He said, it's Kevin Rowland. I thought, that's show business, isn't it? It was just 30 years ago. Everyone would know. And the big news story as we record this, maybe not as you're listening to it or watching it, is Conservatives in crisis. But the Mark Reckless and Brooke Newmark, who both sound like they've been named by William Thackeray as kind of pathetic names, satirical names you would give. Mark Reckless has gone to UKIP from the Conservatives. Same thing, innit? Don't make any difference. Brooke Newmark has sent a picture of his penis, his erect penis. And he's quite an old man. I'm quite impressed he could even do that. Get an erection long enough to take a photo of it. He sent that to a person he thought was an attractive woman. It turned out it wasn't an attractive woman. It was a horrible journalist man. And I bet that journalist man was punching the air, wasn't he, when he got the front page of the Sunday Mirror for that. But the downside of that, to get that front page, he did have to look at a picture of Brooke Newmark's erect penis, which I would, every time he blinked, that's on his retinas now, that every time he closes his eyes for the rest of his, But I think Brooke Newmark, actually, just his, if you don't need a photo of him, his face and head just looks quite like a penis anyway. And I wondered if maybe it was just a picture of his actual face that had been sent through. I said on Twitter that he could play, again, you won't understand, you're going to be lost today. He's going to play the lead in the live-action version of the Wicked Willy film. But then But then I looked at a picture of Mark Reckless, who looks more like a penis. Seriously, he looks a lot more like a penis than Brooke Newmark. He's kind of, he looks like he could be a 6 foot high penis. He's got no neck. It's just like a bald head. I think he could be just a 6 foot tall penis wearing kind of false shoulders on a suit. I think David Icke was right about nearly everything. It's not lizards, though. It's just giant penises. It's again, it's like something written by the unimaginative mind of William Makepeace Thackeray. That's before your time, right? That's before everyone's time. Don't worry, no one who knows who William Thackeray is. He's Al Murray's great-great-great-great-great-granddad. As it happens. So look, we're going to crack straight on. That was my topical eye there, looking at... very enjoyable. We'll maybe come to the audience and for next week's show. So you're not as good as next week's audience, to tell you that right now. So look, we're going to welcome our very first guest to the show. I've been trying to get her on for a long time. Finally, she's available. Very, very busy woman. You will. She's best known, I suppose, as the saleswoman in Don't Buy It. Doesn't sound like a great advert to me. That's... she was also the tourist woman in Count Arthur Strong's TV series. She's very good at playing anything with a woman, and if it's a woman, she can be very versatile. She could do saleswoman or a tourist woman. I don't know if she could do a tourist saleswoman, like a saleswoman who's on holiday. We'll find out. Will you please welcome my first guest, Catherine Ryan, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. Lovely. Thank you. Come in. Sit down. Lovely. We're both drinking... We both drink Barocca. That's what we do.
Oh,
that's
no. No, mine's piss. Is that a good colour? I don't know.
If that is piss, then that is only piss after you've drunk some Barocca, though.
Ah.
So therefore, you do still drink Barocca. I am like Columbo. Well, before we start, let's get this out of the way, because everyone probably talks about this too. What was it like being the saleswoman in Don't Buy It?
It was important.
Okay.
Because that was actually... a viral charity thing that they played on the big screens at Glastonbury. Oh. And it was a pastiche of a Shopping Channel show buying nuclear weapons.
Wow.
So it was saying, it could wipe out the whole of Bedfordshire, and it could do this, and it could do that, and it'll only cost your government $1 billion. And it was kind of a tongue-in-cheek thing about war, so
yeah.
You're kind of an asshole now.
Yeah, I do feel stupid. Nuclear bombs could do a lot more than just wipe out Bedfordshire, though. That is not there. Oh, fuck, I could wipe out Bedfordshire. And everywhere else. It's not just... Oh, so I don't live in Bedfordshire, it's fine. That's what I'd have said if I'd been at Glastonbury.
Well,
so
yeah.
It wouldn't have worked.
Yeah. It was interesting. I mean, James Redmond. Do you know James Redmond?
I do, yeah, from off of Hollyoaks.
Yes, and Casualty and much more.
No, Hollyoaks. just Hollyoaks.
He asked me
from
to do
proper,
that.
Good old Hollyoaks when it was good. Remember, you remember, Dave, right?
Do you know, I don't move quickly very often,
yeah.
But what's the one where it goes do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do- soaps and why they're still on. It's nostalgia, I guess, and you remember liking shit, and so you keep... I don't know. I can't even allow it to be on in the house in case I'm part of some rating system and I'm giving it a point.
What happened with James Redman, though? I interrupted you rudely, as I always do.
Oh, he was involved with this anti-nuclear war charity and asked me to do it. And he's a proper actor. I am a terrible actress. Yeah. People keep putting me in things like Count Arthur Strong, which was lovely, being the tourist woman. I got to see some of London.
You had an advantage, though, in that you talk like a tourist woman already in your natural life.
Yes.
Even though you live here, you sound like you could have come from somewhere else.
I know.
If I was a tourist woman, A, I'd have to go, hello, I'm a woman.
Yeah.
So that would make it harder for me.
Yeah.
I'd do that. And then I'd have
that's
to go.
What we do.
Then I have to go, I'm from abroad.
Yes.
So, you know, I did it, but I did it really well. And probably if people had seen me do that, you wouldn't have got that part.
I thought it was great. I mean, I've realized that what a lot of actors do is they just play themselves anyway.
Yeah.
They really do. That's cheating. And so it's been... I always play myself when I do things.
Yes.
And it's been working out okay. But I can't in my real life, now that I do a little bit of telly and I do more stand-up comedy, I used to play the tourist thing all the time when... I didn't but, you know, beep in for a journey with my Oyster card. Or I would always be like, I'm not from around here. I don't know what's going on. I don't know. And now sometimes people are like, yes, you are. You've lived here for 8 years. Like, they know sometimes.
Yeah, I saw you on Mock the Week. That's what they say.
Yeah. So. But I just flew in to do that because y'all didn't have enough women. I don't know.
Yeah. It's mainly because it's just you're the only one they have on. If you're on all the time, if they had other women, it wouldn't be as bad.
Well, this year they absolutely have other women.
Good, that's all right. I don't watch it.
If you work on your woman act,
yeah,
they
I could do. That's
on.
What I thought. You know, but the thing is, the most successful woman in TV comedy is already a man, isn't it? It's Mrs. Brown.
Oh, yeah.
So it's pretty bad when it's so bad for women that the most famous woman on TV isn't even a woman. That they get a man to dress up. I could do that.
I danced for Comic Relief on a show that I've always loved, Let's Dance for Comic Relief.
Yeah.
And the winners of that were always men dressed as women. Robert Webb did Flashdance as a woman. Rufus Hound did Five for This Love as a woman.
Yeah.
Man, women are cool.
It's just easy being a man comedian because all you have to do is dress up as a woman.
Yeah.
But if a woman dresses up as a woman, people don't like that. They just go, well, that's... Where's the skill in that? They're just dressing up in their regular clothes.
Yeah. Whereas
Robert Webb, he probably does wear that stuff. Definitely, Rufus Hound definitely wears that stuff.
It looks good.
All the time. Mm. So you come from a place called Canada.
You know it.
Yeah. Have you ever seen a Bigfoot while you've been in Canada?
No, I have seen bears.
It's not as good. I mean, it's quite good.
Yeah. I mean,
they're quite dangerous, but the bears and stuff, aren't they?
Absolutely not cuddly creatures.
No.
People don't know. Do you know, bears aren't all around Canada. It's amazing because England is far enough from Canada, but it's our neighbors, the Americans, who know so little about us. And the misconceptions that come from that way are crazy. I live on a border town. I live very, very near to Detroit. So the part of Canada that I'm from is like 8 miles. It's not nice. But because I'm so near, a lot of people in high school worked at the border, and people would come across from Michigan to holiday in Canada. It would be the middle of the summer, and they'd come with skis and snow. Genuinely. And the border kids would be like, where are you going? Just over there. Like, I'm going to go around there and have a glass of water. And then what we're going to do is we're going to go skiing and play in the snow with the kids. And they'd be like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, it's 3 minutes away. 3 minutes away. So we don't have bears. We're a regular town.
It's quite cool they were going on holiday to Canada and just going to the bit that was just over the border as well. It's going, we're going to Canada. Not too far, though.
It's insane. You wouldn't believe how... I mean, you might believe how stupid people are.
Yeah, I do. I do. I believe how stupid American people are. I can believe that. Because we see them on TV a lot, right? So we know.
They'd want to see the bears.
Yeah.
And the Mounties and the Rangers would have to warn them not to do what they kept doing. Separate families. People... They would send their children out of the car where the bears were, paint their hands in honey, and try to have baby bears lick it off for a photo. They'd be like, that'll be adorable. That'll be gorgeous. And then that's fine. Like, the baby bears indeed would lick it off. And then the mother bear would arrive on the scene and eat their children.
That could be the way that Canada conquers America, though. It's just let them come over free, give them a pot of honey.
Yeah. I mean,
then just waltz in.
That's natural selection. I don't even mind when that happens.
So you're from Sarnia.
Sarnia.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Narnia.
It is like Narnia a little bit, but it begins with an S.
But fewer lions, more rednecks.
Yeah. So, because I saw one of your shows a few years ago, the first time I saw you, and you were talking about your mum had your mum featured in the show. In fact,
you liked that show.
I loved that show.
That was so kind. People didn't just dislike that show. People were aggressively angry. People were horrified with that show. They were furious about how much they hated it.
Was that the little misconception? Yeah, little misconception.
People hated that show. I've never seen people more cross than coming out of that show. It wasn't controversial. What I did was, for my first Edinburgh show, my thought process was, why would anyone want to watch anything for an hour? especially me. Why would they want to watch me? I didn't get it. And people do their Edinburgh hour, I think, maybe too soon.
Yeah.
And perhaps I was doing mine too soon, but I thought, well, I'll do is I'll make it a musical, and there'll be all these songs that I'll write, and I'll do some stand-up, and I'll talk about my childhood, and then I'll put my mom in the show, of course, and she'll fly down. She'll help me look after the baby, and she'll be in the show. And you liked that show. For what reason?
Was it just me that liked it? So,
yeah, it was just...
I thought it was very enjoyable. It had a massive payoff of your mum coming... Actually, it was all about being brought up in beauty pageants and stuff.
Yeah.
Which is very interesting, I thought, as a subject. And then at the end, the surprise was your... Spoiler alert, she's probably not going to do it again.
No.
Was your mum actually came on and you did a dance and stuff.
Yeah, we did a dance.
It was good. I really enjoyed it. It was fantastic. You'd think people would. The poster for that one was kind of quite extreme, because that was the poster was you dressed up as if you were in a beauty pageant, but you were about 6 months pregnant.
Yeah, that,
yeah.
Well,
so wearing a so that was and crying with all the mascara down your face.
Yes.
So you'd think anyone thought, "I'll go and see that." Would be ready for pretty much anything. Perhaps they were just disappointed that there was no sort of crying, semi-naked pregnant woman. Maybe you're getting a very specialist kind of audience.
Maybe that was it.
Might be.
Well, I was pregnant, and I didn't want to do those maternity photo shoots. Do you see these on Facebook and everything else where women have inexplicably just an oriental fan or just fabric draped over them, or the worst one, their partner's hands in the shape of a heart over their belly button? You've done these, haven't you? They're so awful. And I went home. That was my first mistake. And everyone, my mother and everyone else, said, oh, you've got to do one of these beautiful pregnant photo shoots. I was like, I absolutely will not do it. And then I was with my gays, some of the people that I first started out with in comedy, one of whom, Andrew Johnston, not the young boy who once won X Factor or Britain's Got Talent, but another, I know he's not famous here. Andrew's really worried. He's coming to support me on my autumn tour, and he's like, are they going to think I'm the boy from Britain's Got Talent? What happened to that kid?
Yeah,
he won before Susan Boyle. He was adorable. Right. Andrew Johnston was his name. Anyway, my Andrew Johnston.
That show business. If people don't remember Kevin Rowland, then they're fucked. Seriously, I mean, he even dresses up like a sort of dandy all the time to make people remember. No one's going to remember Andrew Johnston, are they? Sounds like a politician, isn't there, an Andrew Johnston?
He's saying like P-A-A-Zoo or something.
Right.
But my gay community said, let's do... And they are horrified with pregnant women. I mean, that's not a look. They don't like it.
Confuses them.
Yeah, they hate it.
That's one of the advantages of gayness, is that kind of...
However
hard you try.
Well, your mouth can't get pregnant, I always say. That was birth control lessons growing up. All the mums would say that to us in Sarnia. They said, kitten, they call me kitten, kitten, let's do a photo shoot, but we'll do a cool one, and then your mom will be happy, and your family, and you'll be happy too. So I put on a bikini, and I did it like a pageant with flowers and a sash, and I was crying, like mascara all down my face, just really gruesome, crying tears of joy, and on the sash it said, Miss Teen Pregnancy 2000. And I thought it was cool, and then I thought it was so cool, I used it for the poster. But I don't know. I was a bit mental then.
And have you, has the mentalness subsided?
No.
No. Well, you would, even if you seemed, if you said yes, you wouldn't be, because you'd be mental, so wouldn't be able to take your answer.
Do you know what happened that was horrible? I was doing a run-through for a comedy show. There are these new formats all the time for comedy shows, and they'll do a run-through in the office before they do the pilot, just for commissioners and whomever, for the people who don't know. I know that you know.
I do know.
And, yeah. And they had
I've heard about them. People come back and say, I did one of these. Sounds good.
No. They had a woman coming in who was going to analyze pictures. And I sat backstage with some other comedians, and we got to draw. And I was really excited. And she was going to analyze who was most likely to be a psychopath. And I thought, oh, these guys, I can't wait to see. And I was really excited, really, really looking forward to this cool analysis. I'm really into that stuff. And we went and we did all these jokes and all these different items, and then we got to the psychopath test, and she went from least psycho to most. And as she went down the line, I realized it was just myself and someone else left. And then it was me, and I was so unprepared for it to be me. That I started to cry.
Yeah. Which you learned to do by observing other people crying.
That's right. And I ruined the whole thing. Oh, it wasn't funny anymore. I was really upset. I couldn't believe it because I'd been wondering whether I was a psycho.
Yeah. Well, that seems to... If a woman says, your photo looks like you are, then... You know, what more evidence could there be than
that? It was so creepy. I drew a girl in a forest with some baby rabbits and things, right. And she said that I'd done it really even numbers of roses and hearts, and the clouds were really even, and there were even numbers of everything. She pointed out. I mean, the evidence was irrefutable. I was so hurt.
But no, that show was about... So you, as a child, you were put in beauty pageants by your mum.
Yes.
And it was sort of about coping with that and how... See, that's what I liked about it, because I like to go and see shows that are about a life that I was never put in beauty pageants by my parents for some reason. And, you know, compared to the other children in Somerset, I was very, very attractive.
Yes.
And
you would have won. Yeah. I mean, there are no boys. It's like the opposite of comedy. You would have cleaned up.
Yeah. So it could double up. I could have used the costume for my comedy and been dressed as a woman. That's quite an unusual childhood. And then also you worked at Hooters.
Yeah.
Which we won't talk about too much because everyone talks about. But you kind of had... That's what I think I liked about it. It was just this kind of interesting life of coming through. And Hooters, is ruder sounding... isn't as rude sounding as it sounds, right? It's not at all.
They've done this wonderful job of gaining a reputation all over the world that some people think it's a strip club. It's absolutely not. I was a corporate trainer for Hooters.
Right.
I was a waitress for a little while, and then I trained the girls because I had a really good rapport with the other staff, and they listened to me, and I really cared. I believe so much in doing your job well. Whatever that job is, it is not beneath you. Louis C.K., a fantastic comedian, has great material on this about a barista. But I was a great waitress. I cared a lot, and I made a lot of money there for the restaurant and for myself, most importantly. And Hooters is just chicken and beer and sports on TV. Now, what they do absolutely objectify women. I didn't know that then. They do it in this innocent kind of Britney Spears circa 2001 type of way. Like, I'm sexy. What? Like, you're meant to act and look like a really clean cheerleader. Mm-hmm. And that is the archetype of... And I really grew up thinking that my mission in life, I was put on this earth to be a decoration. I didn't know. I really didn't. I thought the best thing you could be is pretty and sweet and attractive. And I never was... I absolutely never was. I was alarmingly ginger for a while. And then I would always say things that either offended people or upset them or just made them think I was weird. Then my teeth, my jaw needed to be widened before I could have braces. So for my first day of high school, I had a retainer put in that created a gap between my two front teeth that you could fit your finger through. That's a tiny, but put it up to your face. And it's large. And my fall jacket, my autumn coat, was from The Gap. And it's a gap across the back. And it was just like, my mom wouldn't buy me a new one. I was never cool. I was always weird. And that's why comedy has been such a, what's the word?
Sanctuary.
A sanctuary. I'm in Hooters mode again. And what's the word? I don't know. I was just trying to hit on you then. Such a sanctuary because that I don't have to be a cheerleader. I never was. I just thought.
And so what was it that made you decide to... I mean, was it just that? Was there some epiphany where you went, I'm going to go... Because you did comedy in Canada first.
I did.
Yeah.
Not a lot. I was presenting a little bit. I was dancing on this MTV... Well, it's not MTV. It's Much Music, which is a Canadian... equivalent to MTV before we got MTV. Just a show Friday night where you'd stand on a box like this and dance. And do you know who else danced on that show? Marcus Brigstock. He used to be a podium dancer.
That's right, he did.
I just found that out.
And he danced on the Canadian...
Yes, Electric Circus, it was called. He revealed this on Alan Davis Untitled, As Yet Untitled. And I couldn't believe it. Like, what a weird... Now, he did it. Like 30 or 40 years later than I did. I mean, earlier. No, he did it maybe, I don't know, 10 years before I did. But so what a weird thing. And then presenting, you couldn't say anything original ever. As a presenter, you're a vessel. You can't have any original thought. And I would say things that I thought were funny. I always valued comedy, and I wanted to say funny things, but I got in trouble all the time. I presented a show on Saturday mornings called Teens Dating.
Right.
And it was teens dating. And we'd pick them up in a minivan.
With their permission?
They were not of age to give any consent. Okay. We just got genuinely in a van, and we just filmed them during a very awkward moment in a teenager's life. And I would jump in every once in a while to be like, what do you think of her, Chris? It was weird. And we'd take them tanning, and we'd take them for pizza and to fly a kite. And sometimes they would sneak liquor in the van, and I'd have to take it away. It was weird. And I was so frustrated that I could never say what I wanted to say. I was always upsetting people all the time. And there was a comedy club next to the Hooters.
Right.
And I just started doing amateur nights there, but I didn't tell anybody. It's not as though I invited all my friends and started calling myself a comedian. I just did it as an outlet, like as a spin class. You know, you just go to Zumba, not to become, you know, a Zumba expert. You just do it for you or for, I don't know. And I just started doing it like that. And then gradually I met friends there, and it was the very slow epiphany. I still didn't think it would be a career. I just did it because I wanted to do it and because I couldn't keep getting in trouble at Hooters.
Yeah.
Or on teens dating. Or anywhere else I went.
And do you think it worked that because you were this kind of wholesome looking all-American, well, not all-American, but you know what I mean, because you're all Canadian. And then saying sort of unexpectedly filthy things. Was that what you did originally or unexpectedly, you know, unexpected things?
No, I mean, I understood from a really young age that it was kind of endearing to be sweet and innocent, and that's always what I wanted to be in high school or wherever. I wanted to be that really sweet girl. So in stand-up, just because I was nervous, I suppose, my first time I told the jokes that I had written, but I did it sweetly, and then I realized, oh, people like that. And I knew that people liked when Sarah Silverman, for example, did that. Yeah. She doesn't do that anymore. I think it's a nervous tic almost. She started doing it in the beginning, and now, I mean, she's mortified. She goes, look what I was doing. Like, I don't know, did I say something? I don't know. And that is kind of just a crutch.
Yeah.
And I did that, maybe. I think we all emulate someone else's voice a little bit starting out. I don't really think I do it so much now. I hope not.
No, I don't know.
I don't know. every once in a while. I mean, but that is in me. That is part of my personality, too, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But it gives you a license to, you know, it's that unexpected thing of something, your act now is something quite, you know, grotesque or quite serious or, you know, will come out, and people aren't necessarily expecting that, which is using people's expectations against them, I suppose.
Yes.
In a positive way. I mean, you're very happy to talk about quite difficult subjects, but I think not in a shock value way. The problem with stuff like, I mean, I think you've done stuff about abortion and cancer, and those are very difficult subjects to treat. A lot of people will come at those from just a shock angle, and that's it. But your stuff is cleverer than that, I think.
Oh, I try to be. Thank you. I think it's the mark of an amateur comic or someone starting out to do something just for shock value, because it does get a reaction, and then hopefully you learn your way out of it.
Doesn't. I didn't learn that. Well, you know, it's worked for me, though, just to carry on doing it. Big vaginas. So it still works for me. It's fine.
Yeah.
Smelly vaginas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You were never an amateur comedian, isn't it? You came out of the womb just being Richard Herring.
I did. It's disgusting. But because you've had cancer, so you, I think,
and abortions.
And abortions.
Yeah.
So
I loved my abortion. That is what the material's about. And I think that I don't recommend that you have one every day. I just think that no matter what happens, everything can be approached in the right, honest way. And I don't make light of abortion. I mean, you'd have to, I'm not going to do the material at you, but there are parts of anything, I think, that people can relate to and that can be funny, and you can disarm the, like, stigma off of anything.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I think talking about those subjects, honestly, as well, there's a, my wife went to see The Obvious Child, which is about a girl having an abortion, but it's just told in a honest way rather than in, you know, preachy or, you know, and obviously this is bad. There's no, oh, this is a bad thing to do. It's a choice she makes, and it's about, it's a sort of romantic comedy about someone having an abortion.
Yeah.
And,
well, mine was
really
early.
Yeah.
At, like, the time that it doesn't count, I think.
If you're actually just pinching the penis and stopping the sperm coming out, that definitely does.
Really early. Just but, had to say that because I know somebody like, what? Really, like cutting down a tree. Because a tree is alive, but is it?
No, I'm not sure that's.
I mean,
in a way, a baby's creating a lot of carbon dioxide and. it's only going to fuck up the world, isn't it? That's it. That's what I say. We'll move on to I was talking about Paul McCartney, but you were saying you were quite into conspiracy theories.
Speaking of abortions.
Because I was, yeah. Very, very late. Because that's an incredible conspiracy theory, but you're quite, because I think most conspiracy, there must be one conspiracy theory that is true.
Yeah.
But I haven't managed to spot which one it is, but you're quite into conspiracy theories.
I am.
Which ones, and you believe them, or there are ones you believe?
I don't know whether or not I believe all of them. I think for sure there's a line where you can cross over, and you don't want to know too much, because if you go off the deep end, you're never coming back.
Yeah.
And you can get lost in conspiracy theories. One easy one, Joan Rivers.
Yeah.
Dearly departed. Genius of a woman. She died after tweeting a joke at the expense of Beyonce and her family. Okay, but she died on Beyonce's birthday.
Right.
Beyonce was 33. Joan Rivers was born in 1933. Joan Rivers was 81. Beyonce was born in 1981.
Wow. Took a lot of planning, this... this murder.
Most of my conspiracy theories surround Beyonce.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's one that is already on the... I mean, they're all on the internet.
Yeah.
And I don't want to libel anyone.
Doesn't matter on this.
Yeah. So...
With special dispensation, we're allowed to say anything we like on it. That's right. So far.
So there's a book that I recommend you read. It's called Confessions of a Video Vixen.
Okay.
It's by this woman, Corinne Steffens. And she, in the 90s, was the video. The one who... She is beautiful. She would appear in all these, like, rap videos, just dancing. And she claims to have been sleeping with all these famous rappers. She names them as well.
Yeah.
All of these famous rappers, and the wives would call her, ring her up to ask where they were sometimes. Like, everyone knew, and it was fine. And it is, I think, this seedy underworld of the wives in certain circles, anyway, being just okay with mistresses. Snoop Dogg's wife has said on camera, like, oh, you might get them once, but I get them all the time. Group on, groupie. I'm like, what, you win because you do his laundry? I don't get that. And so Jay-Z used to be quite the man about town, and Corinne Steffens tells a story about getting into his limousine, being beckoned in, and him saying, if you S my D.
Yeah.
Can you say that?
You can. I reckon you can say it.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you... And then I'll put you forward in the music video. So she would do that just for 3 feet of being closer to the camera. I mean, it wasn't.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And that's what she became known for, because she gave such amazing blowjobs. Her name in the industry was Superhead.
Okay.
And so she sucked him off, of course. And
well, if she wants to come and sit at the front of here during the recordings. In fact, if you want to do it, Dave.
So for years and years and years, there have been women who come out in blogs and in interviews. One wrote a rap song about it just recently that was released about being with Jay-Z.
Yeah.
While Beyonce was married to him, while Beyonce was pregnant, during all these times. And even Beyonce in her music will say to these women, like, you had half of me, but you ain't even half of me. You know, and I believe it annoys me. This is why. I can't prove that Beyonce is being cheated on. I don't know anything about Beyonce's life, but she is a big celebrity, and I think it's kind of annoying as a civilian woman that this really clever, powerful, rich woman is just staying silent about something, I believe. I mean, one of these mistresses, Kathy White is her name, died in her home the day before she was to go to the newspapers and talk about her affair with Jay-Z. She died. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying Jay-Z killed her. I'm saying Solange did. No, I don't know. I don't know. I just think that you get to this upper echelon where stuff starts to happen and you don't hear about it and some dirty things happen. I think some of Bill Clinton's interns have also died mysteriously. One of them got shot in the face at a coffee shop. I mean, I don't... You just need to Google these things. Cause...
But people do die. You know, that's the thing. People do. Everyone does die.
Like I will.
Yeah, but maybe.
Under mysterious circumstances.
Maybe now, after this gets out.
Okay, but three...
Because I know Beyonce listens to this. She loves this podcast.
I just think, I don't know. Oh, and Nicole Kidman's father just recently died in Singapore, where he fled after some allegations came out about an upper echelon of wealthy men doing
bad
things.
Yeah, that was made up, though. That one was made
up. Was it?
I think so. I think
How
I
do you know?
Because I read something saying it was, so I believe it.
This is the thing.
Because they could never fake that.
I just don't think... I understand why conspiracy theories exist.
Yeah.
Because I think so much of what's in the media is outright lie, and so... And I think that there are people who are so rich and so powerful, such a small percentage of people who do and say and own everything, that they could get away with murder or anything else.
I think that's definitely true. I mean, I'm sure there are things like that. I mean, it's when it gets into like my Paul McCartney one. But why would the others go along with having a bloke pretending to be Paul McCartney in the back? Why? It doesn't make any sense from start to finish. It'd be better if Paul McCartney had died. Then they'd have sold loads more records. Going, oh no, we can't. We're making too much money. So everyone, we're going to have to buy out the police, the person he's crashed into, or the family of the person pretending to be him. Jane Asher is going to have to carry on going out with the double. It's quite a lot of. And then it turns out that he was really good at writing songs because he wrote all the...
Maybe he continued to write the songs as a ghostwriter. Maybe he wanted
to... He was a ghost.
No, I'm not saying he died. Maybe he was in a relationship and he wanted to break up with a woman, but she was really one of these stage five clingers and he had to fake his own death. I've considered doing that.
Yeah.
You just don't know.
I do. I think I do know. I think the other thing about Paul McCartney is he's still alive, and you can look at him and stuff. Seems, you know, yeah. Paul, that's not Paul McCartney. Yeah, probably is though. I mean, you know, out of all the things, I'll ask you an emergency question. This is a new. It's all new emergency questions. You're going to be very upset. Yeah, none of the old ones. There might be an odd one. If you had to choose between. If you had to choose between these two choices, mm-hmm. would you rather date a man who was a 6 foot tall penis with a face, like Mark Reckless, or a man who instead of having a penis had a tiny man growing out there? So it's either a 6 foot penis, and that penis could wear like a false suit that made him look like he was a human being. And he'd be a really big and he'd just be bald. Put like a little wig on the back to make it look like it's
okay.
Just don't look too closely at the top of his. He might wear a hat, and he would have a face on his penis head. But he'd be a 6 foot high penis, or a man who had and then every time he took his trousers down, the man would go, "Oh, hello, Catherine, it's me, the tiny man." Presumably, the tiny man would also have a penis, but it'd be a very tiny penis.
Is the man a different man, or is it another? Is it a clone?
It's like a different person. Obviously, I'm going to have to clarify that. It's not a clone of the. It's not like a man He's so vain. He's had a penis removed. His penis removed and replaced with a clone version of himself. That would be insane. It's a man who's just instead. He's been born like this. It's like, I suppose, like a sort of conjoined twin of some kind. But the man is tiny. It's like a tiny 6-inch high man.
Okay.
6 to 8 inch high man. On average.
Well, you know I've already dated a 6-foot penis. So I think I would choose the man with the tiny man. That'd be nice.
Yeah.
It'd be like polygamy in a way.
Yeah.
I'd get two boyfriends, and as long as I got along with both of them. Yeah, I don't see the harm in that.
It'd be difficult if one of them got jealous of the other. It'd be hard to choose one over the other as well, wouldn't it, I suppose? That's the new emergency question. The audience don't seem to like it as much as it may have a limited lifespan. If in the event of a zombie apocalypse, what tactics would you employ to survive?
I mean, I think I'd kill myself.
Would you? But then you become a zombie.
Oh, no!
If we're going by Walking Dead rules.
I really hope that doesn't happen. I've never enjoyed zombie films.
No.
I know some people really love them. I can't stand them. It upsets me.
It is upsetting, the idea of the world turning into a zombie apocalypse.
Some people think those films are really cool.
Yeah.
Do
you think
like
anyone
some?
Would sort of... I don't know if anyone's watching thinking, I hope this comes true one day. I don't know, I'd like to be a zombie. I don't know. I hope I'll be a zombie one day, or I hope I'm a bloke who's having to run away from zombies and stab him in the head. I mean, it's, you know, you've got to stab him in the head. It's quite easy. On most of them, they move quite slowly and are quite stupid. It's just tiresome, I think, more than anything.
They work fast in one film.
They were, but that's not right. That isn't what will happen when it happens. They'll be slow and stupid, and you'll be able to just get them by hitting them in the head with a shoe or whatever. Mm. It's just like, oh, God, here they... After a while,
I mean, in London, you'd have no chance. I mean, they'd be on top of you. Just, it's too busy here. If I could get out, I would go somewhere like New Zealand.
Okay.
And I think when there's another world war, I think New Zealand is where we want to be. I think that'll be the last place to go. New Zealand is my, you know, escape route for anything.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to get to, though, and, you know, you have to...
Well, I mean, in London...
Certainly in a zombie sense. How are you going to get to New Zealand? You're on a flight with the zombies flying the planes.
Well, in London, I wouldn't have a chance to employ any plan. We'd just all be zombies immediately. Yeah.
And you don't want to get on a plane in a zombie apocalypse. If there's one zombie on the plane, then everyone... Then there's no escape then, is there? You've got to think ahead, Catherine.
You've upset me.
I'll ask one more emergency question. This one did feature very slightly. They're all new ones. People have... Look at how upset the audience are. They're kind of going, where's my ham hand? It's never going to be asked. We're never going to find out. I want to know. We're never going to find out. Here's a good one. Where do you get your crazy ideas from? Just interested to know how you... The stuff you say is so crazy. How do you take... What do you do to come up with stuff like that? I asked that... I had one question to ask Richard Pryor shortly before he died. I was The Guardian said you can ask Richard Pryor one question and he would answer it. And I thought it'd be really funny. Because as a comedian, I thought he would get that I was joking, because that's what all comedians get asked. Where do you get your crazy ideas from? Don't you get asked that all the time? And then he just said, from life. And from observing things in life. And I thought, oh.
And then he died.
Then he died. And I'd wasted my one question to Richard Pryor. Okay, one more chance. This is one more emergency question. It's not working. These are new emergency questions. So I'll go. Talking of dying, what celebrity would you like to stroke your hair as you die? If you could choose one celebrity, just to see, as you're dying, they're going, it's all right, it's going to be all right. Is there
so
any celebrity
creepy.
You'd like to... It is a little bit... Well, all comforting. Who would comfort you in that situation, do you think?
I don't know. I don't know. Yeah. These are very creepy emergency questions.
Yeah.
A celebrity to stroke my hair while I die. Well, I don't like being stroked. I would hate that.
Yeah.
You know when you're ill and somebody wants to come near you and hold your hair, and I just, get away from me. I wouldn't come out of my room to have my daughter. I didn't want anybody touching me then. I'm like a cat.
My cat doesn't like me. The only thing my cat likes, both of my cats actually, are like being kicked in the face. That's the only affection they will take. And you might say, how did you discover this, Rich? But my cat will attack my feet until I fight it with my... And then actually pin it down into a corner with my foot.
Wow.
And then it'll go... And then it purrs. Like. But if you try to stroke it with your hand, it'll just run away. But if you can kick it, with your foot, hit it... loves it. I didn't see your show in Edinburgh this year because I think we may have clashed. My wife saw it and she said that you have a young daughter, 5-year-old daughter.
Yes.
And you're employing her as your support act, or you were in Edinburgh.
I was.
Yeah, she's...
She's around sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes she's not around, so she doesn't do comedy with me all the time. But if it's appropriate... I mean, there's a charity gig at Union Chapel for a kids' farm. She did a little set there. I mean, she just wants to be a part of everything, so I'm certainly not a pushy stage mom making her do it. If anything, I think bringing her around comedy... she'll grow up and do something useful. She'll be an orthopedic surgeon or something instead. But when she's there lately, I think I don't know. There's no right or wrong. Well, there's a wrong way to parent. But I think when she asks me to do things, I'm hesitant to ever say no unless I have a really good reason.
Yeah.
So when she comes on tour or in Edinburgh, my show was 6:45. She was still awake.
Yeah.
She wanted to come. And she wanted to first do the sound check. And then she'd say, well, can I tell a joke? I'd say, well, I guess you couldn't tell a joke. And then you leave. And she started to do that. Not every single night. But I think it gave people a kind of a, in an Edinburgh show sense, a snapshot of my life. Is this is a person who follows me around absolutely all the time. All day, every day, without reprieve.
Does she write her own material, or is it... what's?
She does.
Where does she get her crazy ideas from?
From Richard Pryor.
Really?
From his life. No, she has one. What are two things you never eat for breakfast?
Don't know.
Lunch and dinner. That's, kind of a groaner.
That's good.
Yeah,
no, it's good.
She's five. And then she has a story that I don't know where she got it from. I don't want to disparage her material in case she watches this one day. But it's about shopping for milk and bread and coming home with a cat. But
my wife mentioned this routine.
Yeah.
Said it was very good, though.
I didn't like it.
It sounded like me from my wife's report that my wife would have just liked it if your daughter had stayed on the whole time. Yeah, so you've worked in sitcoms... with both Matt LeBlanc and Matthew Crosby.
Yeah.
Who is the bigger idiot out of Matthew? Who is the bigger diva out of Matt LeBlanc and Matthew Crosby from Pappies?
Mm-hmm.
People don't seem aware of him so much. Joey from Friends and Matt Crosby. Were they similar at all to work with?
I didn't have many interactions with Matt LeBlanc.
No, I was going to say Matt Crosby because he's...
No, he's coming up. No, Matt LeBlanc, I saw him, and we were on set a little bit, but we didn't really speak.
Yeah.
I thought maybe that he might be a lad about town. I don't know what you want to call it. Not a womanizer. You're not doing anything wrong if you haven't got a wife.
Mm-hmm.
I thought maybe that he would flirt with some of the girls. But no, he seemed, I don't know. I mean, I do know, but I can't really say. And then, and then Matthew Crosby is so cool. And the Pappies boys, Tom and Ben and Matthew, I'm making a concerted effort to hang around really good men. And that's what these boys are. They're really good, good men. You know, I think it's important even for my daughter to see that and for what I mean for me. Just to not have sex with, but to just be in the company of...
Yeah, you don't want to have sex with Matthew Crosby.
Well, you know what I mean? I think it's an exercise. And then you know what a good man is, and then you can have sex with one.
Yeah, not Matthew Crosby, though.
I will have sex with Matthew Crosby right now. Where is he? No, I can't.
No.
But, I mean, they're funny, and they're generous, and they're cool to work with, and they're really kind, and they're like this really neat package. They work so well together.
That's disappointing. I thought you'd slag Matthew Crosby off. I should do this. This is a thing I've done with a lot of guests recently. There is a thing. Have you seen this website? I was nervous about going to this website for you, I have to say. I thought this... There's a website called Dirty Britcom Confessions, and they do have an international section, so you are included on this.
People have tweeted it to me.
Have they? Yeah, so people will go up and put their sexual fantasies about... There are some, to give you an example, here are some new ones about me, but I think people just go now because they know I'll read them out, so they they go and put quite amusing things about me. The most recent one is, I always assumed Rich Herring was in his 50s. But now I know he's in his 30s, I'm interested. I'm 47. The kind of weird thing, you go, I'll judge someone by not how old they look, but how old they are. If he was in his 50s, I would not fancy him. Oh, he's in his 30s, okay. I'll still fancy the raddled old man. Someone else said, I would like to put lipstick on Richard Herring while he's asleep.
Okay.
Someone said, I want Richard Herring to eat my ass like he eats rice and beans. With a fork? I don't know. Just not very often. So I thought yours would be... I genuinely thought, oh, God, I don't even want to look at the ones for Catherine Ryan because they'll be...
Uh-oh.
But they're actually... There aren't as many as I expected.
Oh.
I think...
Thank you for expecting many.
That was... And they aren't as appalling and sexist as I expected them to be. Hmm. But a couple of them were quite interesting lesbian fantasies.
Okay.
But the one was, I want to get a giant squidgy cake with ooey cream, jam and sponge and watch Red Hot Temptress, Catherine Ryan, slowly ease her naked tight ass cheeks onto it. Should be prepared to... To me, that's... It's probably going to spoil the cake a bit. I mean, that's... It's, no offence, but once...
Wow.
However clean your arse is...
Yeah.
Once your arse has been eased onto that cake... that's not a cake I'm that interested in eating anyway. It's been like that.
Some people...
Yeah.
Like to see things ruined. And nothing shocks me anymore because they will tweet things right at me that they're not putting on this website.
Right.
One man tweeted me a photo of himself shitting on his bedroom floor. Yeah. And then...
As an opening gambit? Or was there a tweet going, would you be interested in pictures of bedrooms at all? You know, just a...
No, it was just that, and then it said, please retweet this and humiliate me. See, I get a lot of the ones who want, they think I'm a dominatrix for some reason, which I'm completely the opposite. Okay. I mean, I'm really nice, but no, there was that.
Yeah.
And other things, like feet are a popular one. I purposely don't wear strappy sandals and things because people keep asking me to. And I think these are not the kind of people that I... need in my life.
That is I was tweeting about the Conservative MP's penis.
Uh-huh.
As you do the other day, and then someone tweeted me a picture of their own penis, their own erect penis.
You know what else?
As if that because I've been discussing someone doing that. Oh, I'm up. Yeah, sure, I'm up for that. Send.
Oh yeah, welcome to the jungle.
Yeah.
They will do that. Do you know what else they'll do? They'll go, oh, I saw you this video of you at Radio 1 with a link, and it'll be just a 6-second video, a Vine, of them arriving onto themselves. And so they trick, and that's what annoys me. They trick you to watch it.
Yeah.
Because you go, oh, there's a video. Why was that? And then you're like, oh, no, that's you jerking off. But that feels a bit like a flasher.
I mean, I don't know. You saw, I've just blocked that guy, and he's somebody tweeted me before. Maybe he was thought we were friends enough.
Yeah.
Now for me to see his penis. But it's. That's basically, you know, that's you should go to the police about people who do that.
Why? I mean, it just, yeah, maybe. What are they going to do? They don't care.
It's kind of weird that people feel that Twitter is beyond the realms of reality. Oh, it's fine. I'll send a picture of someone myself wanking off to someone.
I've had worse.
Yeah.
Well, worse than what I just said.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, and I apologize on behalf of all disgusting men.
But I genuinely don't care. This is the thing with trolls and things because, I don't know if it's why, but because I endured so much bullying and abuse when I was younger, I just, like, I really young went, well, I don't really care what you think. And you get up tomorrow and you're the same person. I genuinely don't care. I want people to have a nice time and I want to make people laugh. And I want, of course, I don't want anyone to waste their evening. I think it is a big deal to be invited into someone's home if you do a panel show or if you do whatever. So in a way, they're entitled to dislike you. And I think it's weird that they want to tell you how much they do. But it really, truthfully, does not hurt my feelings. You can tweet me all the hate you want. People say they're going to kill me. People say where and how they're going to kill me. People say, I really don't care. I don't care. I don't care. If you feel like you want to get some hate out in the world, perhaps it's for someone else who's not me, just send it to me. I will absorb that hate. I will do that for you. I'm a bit like Jesus Christ. Don't care.
It is. I mean, it's odd, but it's because people, certainly the things that are people telling you they don't think you're funny, which obviously all comedians
don't
will get.
Care.
But it's sort of odd because it's like going, well, you think that it matters in your world what you think, but it doesn't matter to anyone else.
No.
What the opinion of every single, it's like, oh, sorry to let you know, but I don't think you're funny. You go, okay.
Yeah.
There's a million people, or 60 million people in the country, as long as like 1,000 of them like me, it's okay.
Well, it's the thing, like, what kind of person would I be if I expected everyone to like
me?
I learned that really early.
Yeah.
And you know, there are people in the school run who talk badly about each other. These mums, a lot of them only eat on weekends. By Friday, they're ratty. And if you're a comedian, you're kind of lucky in a way, because you find out just right away what people think of you. You don't walk around like, oh, I don't think Sharon likes me very much in the office. It's like, me.
Cool. Well, I think we might have to, let me just, yes, oh dear, it's, time has flown by.
I'm pretty chatty. Sorry.
You're very chatty. That's a good thing. Do you think that MP should have been sacked for, or should have resigned for showing his penis to someone he thought was asking to see his penis?
They all show their penis. There was that famous, the one in America, Anthony Weiner.
Yes.
He was married, and he got caught on 3 occasions showing his penis to Snapchat. Yeah. JFK and Clinton. I mean, I think Bill
JFK
Clinton,
never Snapchatted his penis.
I think Bill Clinton was a good president as far as American presidents go. And, like, you know, having affairs and doing these things. Those are some of the least offensive things he ever, I mean.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think one shouldn't do that, but I think it's a different ball game to running an office or running a, you know, whatever.
Well, if someone, you know, if MPs were just sending the pictures of their penises randomly to constituents, I think that would probably be wrong. But to be honest, I'd quite like, I've elected these people. I would, if I want to see their penis, I think they should have to show it. And then I can make a judgment from their penises.
Yeah, I mean, it's
or vaginas.
Or vagina. Thank you.
Or breasts, whatever they want to show me.
I've always said that people, increasingly, people have sex pictures now. Yeah. And I think that we should reclaim the power from these hackers. And we should release our own sex pictures. Do it like an ice bucket challenge. I think that's not a bad plan. Just be like, I would like to thank Richard and that creepy guy from work for nominating me. You nominate someone else. I mean, it's not the end of the world.
No.
But it's a case-by-case basis. This MP thing just happened, so I don't know all the details.
Well, you know, someone pretend. Just like he was, it's flirty fishing, isn't it? It's like the Christians used to do this. They used to send girls out to trick people into becoming Christians in a slightly different way. But it's like, if you kind of tweet enough blokes and set from a picture of a pretty girl, some of them are going to go, all right, yeah.
That's
some lonely
happened.
Middle-aged man is going to go, who looks like a penis already. He's a very unattractive man.
Well,
so if a beautiful woman, I mean, really, he should have looked at it and gone, he should have looked at her feed and where she's going, oh, I went to see an MP at Question Time, what a legend, and look at the 20-year-old girl go, that is not a real person. And you should go, that's not a real person who's trying to have sex with me. But if you are overcome by midlife crisis, as I was luckily before I met my wife.
Yes, good.
Then, you know, that might be the kind of thing that...
It's easy to do, to entrap someone, I think.
It's very easy to entrap.
Especially if they don't know. How old is this man?
I think he's bald, isn't he? See, I say, I don't, no offence to bald guys, but, you know, I see a bald guy and I think, you know, they're 60 years old. Because they've got to be a lot older than me, right? Because I've got loads of hair. So there's going to be a point when I'm as old as you, that definitely as old as you, that I'm going to... But then you go, and then they go, oh, I'm 37. I go, oh, no. Because I also think that I'm 25.
Yeah.
That's the problem. I may have just tweeted myself. I may have done that one myself. Anyway, look, never mind. We will have to, unfortunately, draw things to a close. But it's been lovely to talk to you. Thanks for coming on. Please give a massive round of applause to Catherine Ryan, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. You have been listening to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Catherine Ryan. The music was by Pest, and still is by Pest. You're listening to it now. It is not in the past. Thanks to Orange Mark at the British Comedy Guide. Thanks to Ian Tunes at iTunes. Does a lot of good work for us. Thanks to all the staff at the Leicester Square Theatre podcast. The place it is filmed, which is the Leicester Square Theatre. And Chris Evans, not that one, or the other one, and all of his crazy team of Welsh misfits from Go Faster Stripe. This was produced by Ben Walker. It's a Fuzz GoFasterStripe.com and Sky Potato production for the internet. I hope you enjoyed it. That was show one. That was all right, wasn't it? Given I was quite ill during that. That, you know, you couldn't tell, could you, during it? I don't know if you could, because I'm recording this beforehand. If you've enjoyed this, please tell your friends about it. You can, as I say, you can watch it on video at iTunes, Richard Herring Video, Leicester Square Theatre Podcast, search for that, or search on Vimeo or what's the other one? YouTube, you can go to as well. I told you I was ill. I know, that's a kind of, that's a thing you put on a gravestone, isn't it? So anyway, yes, go and if you want to help us pay for more of these and be able to do this ever again, please go to gofasterstripe.com/badges. Give us a one-off donation or a monthly donation, ideally. If you do a monthly donation, you get all kinds of brilliant extras like behind-the-scenes questions. You get prizes that you can enter a draw for every month. It's really good. You get advance warning of who's coming on as well, so you can buy tickets when it's going to be someone who sells out. Or you can come and see me on tour. I'm doing my new show, what's it called, Lord of the Dance Settee, which is all around the country from October to May. Go to richardherring.com for details of that. I'm in Belfast on Sunday, if this is out in time. If not, I was in Belfast on Sunday. Anyway, we'll be back next week with Mark Gatiss, so beat that, you can't. Thanks, bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.